I do this at the beginning of every Halloween episode, and God, my shtick is getting old, even for me. Although one day I think I should just do a whole Halloween episode like that. Just like, oh, are you, Nadia?
Okay. I thought you were gonna go like spooky soundtrack, so just like woo, like an hour of woo.
In the background, I'm going to play that awesome cassette tape that they used to sell at Hallmark. Spooky stuff. I was such a spooky kid that I had one of those. I was like, Mom, you got to buy me this tape of Halloween, of haunted house sounds. And she was like, sure, whatever. You're never going to have a career. You're obviously, I've given up
See,
on you. And so she bought me. She bought, and I used to listen to it, and it's just like, it would just be like wind, ch like heartbeat, and then like, ooh, and it's like, it's not even music.
that's oh my goodness, that's so funny. I was just gonna what say like wonder out loud who bought that and
Me.
why, and you bought that and why?
See,
Because she made your mom.
I think the idea, at least. That's what they would say, was like, you're supposed to like use it if you're turning your house into a haunted house attraction for the neighborhood kids, which I guess I think only rich spooky people do that. I can't imagine, like, doing that. But
I've only seen that on sitcoms. I never actually knew anybody that was like, we're gonna have the neighborhood kids go through my house
yes, yeah, I know, right?
in
Crazy.
their outside shoes and walk around and be scared. I'm like,
Outside shoes.
who is doing all this work?
I would be like, I'd come out as a serial killer and be like, oh, take your shoes off. Let's respect the floor. And then you can't be scary at that point. This is Pop Culture Man Children with the Kids on the Street called PCMC. This is a Halloween episode. This is Halloween 2024. I'm here with the co-host ghost with the most,
Thank
Nadia
you.
Cater.
Oh man, what an amazing rhyme. Thank you.
Nadia, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited for spooky season. I'm ready for pumpkin spice lattes. I bought a pumpkin from the grocery store today. I'm gonna
Nice.
put that out. We're ready. I'm done with summer. Fuck summer.
Fuck summer.
I'm ready for cozy sweaters and ghosts and windows. So please go.
Yes. Guess what I had for breakfast today?
A spooky sandwich.
I had a pumpkin and cream cheese. Apple, not apple pie. I just call it that. A pumpkin and che cream cheese pie from McDonald's, like their little apple pies,
But they're pumpkin and
but it's
cream
pumpkin and
cheese.
cream cheese instead of apple.
How was it?
Delicious.
Oh my goodness, that's
And
great.
I'm not the hugest cream cheese guy. Like, when people throw cream cheese into shit, a lot of times I'm like, eh, I don't know about that. Like, Barnes and Noble had, oh, I guess it would be Starbucks. Had some like cream cheese and jelly sandwich or something that was god awful.
Ugh.
But yeah, I'm all pumpkin everything. I love pumpkin so much. How have you been spending your spooky season? Do you watch spooky movies? Do you read spooky books? Do you follow the presidential race closely?
No, that's too
There's some
scary for me.
that's some commentary for you folks.
Too spooky. Ooh, the
Ooh.
future of student loan
How is it
debt.
this tight a race? How could you be undecided?
I don't know why they don't start the debate with that. Like, that would get me way more interested.
I
But
don't like the
yeah.
term undecided. I think we should change it to uninformed, unbothered, uncaring, undecided.
The uncaring masses, yeah.
Yeah. So you're the uninformed, you're the uneducated. Tell me, well, why don't you give a shit about anything? But no, sorry, I digress, as we do. How you spend your spooky season?
Well, first, I just want to comment that you should do a Man on the Street podcast episode where you just ask people that directly. I'd love
Yeah.
to see how far it goes before you get punched out. Yeah, so how I spend my spooky season really varies. I tend to watch more movies.
Sure.
I actually joined like this local horror book club,
What?
and yeah, and they read horror all throughout the year, but like
You're seasonal.
I'm
From
at
January, you're gonna be like, all right, guys, see you next year.
I I could consider it. This we're watch we're supposed to be reading. I'm a little late on the uptake, but I'm gonna get it done by the end of the month. Is we're reading Chuck what the hell's his name? Actually, sorry, one
Palinuk?
second.
Palinuk? I can't think of any other literary Chuck besides Palinuk.
No. Chuck Tingle
Chuck
wrote
Tingle. That's not a name.
the okay, so this is what's wild. Chuck Tingle is the is the pen name of a mysterious author who
Sure.
writes a lot of garbage.
Sure.
Like he writes I'm assuming he's a he. I don't even think he's a we don't know if he's a he or not,
Right.
but Chuck Tingle
Chuck Tingle.
writes a lot of like he writes a bad romance, but like really bizarre romance. Like, yeah, I'm trying to like pull up his stuff right now. Like Harriet Porber, trans wizard.
Oh,
Like,
so is this person one of these like I publish my own shit on Amazon authors?
you know, I don't know because this was published by Nightfire. So I think maybe that's where he started. But it would be like a lot of supernatural romance, like Hounded by President Bigfoot and like scary stories to tingle your butt. But then he, but my book club picked this book called Camp Damascus, which is
Okay.
about a horror novel about a gay conversion camp in the country.
Oh.
So I'm like, okay, so did you just like build your career on nonsense and then you're kind of doing something sort of serious right now? I don't,
That sounds all right. Tell me how that is. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, mystery. And his like author photo is just him with a bag on his head. Just
That's
like
great.
in sunglasses. I don't know if you could see that on the
I
Zoom.
can see that. That's fantastic.
That's so I was like, oh, you're whoever you are, you're hilarious.
That's
But
awesome.
yeah, so that's what we're reading for September. But October, and I'm really disappointed in this, we're reading Salem's Lot by Stephen King,
So they went with a
which
classic.
I was like, oh, fine, I'll read it again.
I've
I
never read it.
All right, here's what's funny. I read it like 2 years ago, and all I remember from it was that, and I feel like I have this general like Stephen King memory of this, of all of his books. There's some really cool imagery, and then nothing happens for like 50 pages.
That's
It
like a lot of his stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly, but so I'm like, am I really remembering that from Salem's Lot, or am I remembering that from like so many books of his? But I do like the mini series that came out like in the 80s, I think. It was like, yeah, it's on Shudder. I watched that too a few years ago, and they put it back on Shudder recently, so I want to rewatch it because it's like 3 hours long or something.
Yeah, but the scene with the kid in the window, classic horror moment.
Absolutely. So I'm down for that. So actually, back to what the original question, which was like, what do you do in general? Is I watch more movies, and now that I am in a horror book club, I'm trying to push in more reading more horror. And the good thing about being in a book club is they suggest things that you might not think about or hear about. Like I would never read a Chuck Tingle book, but here we
But
are.
now you're going to be a big fan. All right, good.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of books, let's segue into today's topic, which is based on a book. Today, we are talking about the 1933 film The Invisible Man, directed by James Whale. He made this in between Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. James Whale is, well, we've already talked about him this month. We're doing all Universal Horror this month, Universal Monsters. James Whale, we'll get to him later. The Invisible Man is based on a book by H.G. Wells. The screenplay is by R.R. Sheriff. There's uncredited work, writing work by Preston Sturges and Philip Wiley. The cinematographer is Arthur Edison, who also did Frankenstein, Casablanca, and The Maltese Falcon. And Edison, by the way, spelled different from Thomas Edison, no relation. Edison does an amazing job. And in fact, something I noticed when I was watching it again last night was he introduces the Invisible Man to the audience the exact same way he introduces Frankenstein's monster to the audience. And we'll get to that later. But let me ask you, what is your experience and history with the Universal Monster films?
Okay, good question. So
Thank you.
Yes, I've only watched Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, and those are both excellent movies. Oh no, I'm sorry. I watched The Wolfman. I did.
Okay.
With Lon Chaney Jr., right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I've watched a few of them. There's some that I didn't watch. I didn't watch Dracula. I didn't watch The Mummy,
Yeah.
which you hate, so I
Yes.
really trust your opinion anyway. And I wouldn't bother. And I'm also aware that it was like a cinematic universe in itself, and that they tried to reboot that multiple times, and it just doesn't come around.
Yes, and now they're building a theme park around it in Universal Studios.
I feel like that makes more sense. Make it a
Yeah.
theme park. These
Yeah.
I feel like these images and these monsters are more well known for the product than the actual movie. Like,
Yeah.
for the longest time, my perception of like when a Universal monster would be like Booberry or
Yeah,
Frankenberry.
yeah,
Like, I
yeah.
don't like I or like the Halloween masks that are not really the same as the movies at all. It's
Sure.
yeah.
There, it's iconography. Have you ever, for Halloween as a kid, dressed as any of these characters?
Dracula.
Dracula. Oh, yes, I've seen that photo of you as Dracula.
Wait, did
Yeah.
you?
Yes, I have. I've seen it on Facebook many
Oh
times.
my God, I gotta find that.
You look miserable in it, which is every photo of you from childhood, you look miserable.
Fair, I'm consistent.
So look, I do think it's a very interesting franchise. It seems like you've got enough. I would just say watch Dracula, Todd Browning's Dracula, because that's very much worth it. But yeah, you don't need much else. But
Don't
let me
need the
tell you,
mummy.
my history is that I was really into it as a kid, but I only really watched Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Dracula. The Wolfman was my favorite as a kid. I don't understand. I still like the Wolfman, but the directing in the Wolfman compared to like these James Whale movies is like nothing. James Whale is just like, to me, he's like, I wouldn't call him the auteur of these movies, because I feel like Todd Browning's work in Dracula is more influential on the whole franchise, but James Whale is the best. And when I was a kid, for whatever reason, I never got around to watching The Mummy or The Invisible Man, and I always thought of them as like lesser monsters. Like The Mummy is like, okay, I never got around to it. And then the Invisible Man, it's like, okay, he's like, I know he's one of the Universal monsters. I know that in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, he has a cameo at the end where he's voiced by Vincent Price, not by Claude Rains, who plays him in this movie. But then last year, I watch a lot of movies for Spooky Season 2. I decided to like fill in some gaps, and I watched The Mummy and I watched The Invisible Man, and I was shocked at what I found, because I thought I would like The Mummy and find The Invisible Man, I thought I'd be like fine with it. I thought it would be kind of disposable. The Mummy was just a sort of shitty ripoff of Dracula. It's sort of a beat for beat ripoff of Dracula. It's not good, I think. There's a couple of good images, but it's not great. But then this, I fucking loved. I mean, just watching again last night, I was like, God, this movie is so good. I can't believe I slept on it my whole life. It's so good. And when I talked about Frankenstein with my brother Anthony for this year's Halloween, I was talking about how James Whale was a queer filmmaker, and he has this very queer, campy sensibility that you can see just a tiny little bit in Frankenstein, but by the time you get to Bride, it's fully formed. And he's also fully at the height of his powers and can kind of do more what he wants and has power. But when you look at the Invisible Man, it's very much here too.
Oh, totally. I was like, wow, and I was, being a little casual when I was watching it. I was like, wow, this queen really put together a great movie. I was like, this is so campy. I wasn't expecting that at
No, me
all.
neither. I was shocked when I saw this. I thought it was going to be very dry, and it ends up having this incredible tone that I don't even know how he pulls it off, because it's scary and suspenseful at times, and it's hilarious at times. And it's so hard to do that. Horror comedy, I think, is so hard to make work. And usually you have to make the horror elements and the comedy elements kind of live separately. But here's scenes where Claude Rains as the Invisible Man is very menacing. Like the scenes between him and his former partner are very, very menacing and like make you feel tense and uncomfortable. But then like he'll also do something funny, like him in nothing but pants skipping down the street singing, what is he singing?
Oh my God, I
I'm
don't I didn't write
better.
it down, but that
Oh,
was
it's
so
like,
funny.
oh, what was it? It's like, this is how we, oh, what, how does, what is he saying? It's so ridiculous. What is he saying? Oh, here we go gathering nuts in May, nuts in May, nuts in May, as some lady runs away from him screaming. It's so brilliant. It's so funny.
Yeah, you're right. It's like, how did they manage the how did James Whale manage this tone? Because there's also a scene where he smashes a chair and kill like murders a police
Yeah.
officer, but then like 5, 10 minutes later, he's ripping the pants off another police officer and like
Yes.
you said, just running down the
It's
street
straight
and
up
then
slapstick.
it's like,
Yeah.
how did I've never seen a horror comedy handle that tone so well.
I know, I know. And you know, there's not a lot of kills in this movie, but the kills are brutal. Like the kills are really brutal for 1933. This is a year before the Hays Code, before the production code. So you have really brutal kills here, but then at the same time, you're also laughing at what Claude Rains is doing. It really is amazing.
It's also not remembered as a horror, like you and I both did not know it was a horror comedy. It's also not remembered as that. It's remembered as I feel
Horror.
like that's something that happens with the Universal movies, more the iconography than what's the reality.
Yeah. This
Yeah,
is
it's
basically a comedy. This is the, I mean, there's tension and it's definitely a horror comedy, but I mean, I feel like it's more comedy than horror.
I would agree. And I think that is the good way to go with this, because I mean, if you think about it, the absurdity of this movie is like one man experiments with himself and turns invisible, but then also a side effect of that poison is that it drives him insane. And
Yeah.
part of the insanity is him terrorizing like one naked man, by the way, because he's invisible
Right.
only if he's completely naked. So
Yes.
he's a naked man terrorizing a small village in England. And it's like, how could that not, how can you take that seriously in any way?
Yeah.
It was a
Yeah.
good take. It was a good take.
Yeah. So some things that this has in common with other Universal movies is it's quite short. It's around 70 minutes, which is typical for this this series. And when I was talking about Frankenstein with Anthony, he's a very big fan of the book, which is a very expansive, long narrative. And he was talking about how it's like such it's so truncated. And I feel the same way here. Like we don't see him become the Invisible Man. We don't see any of that. We don't see his established relationship with his girlfriend. It's almost like a happening, like a moment, more than a fully fleshed out narrative. It's like he goes to this inn, he leaves the inn. He goes back to the inn. We're done. Kind of. I mean, basically, like it's happening in such a snappy, snappy pace. Well, and part of that's because these were like B movies.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, let's get a little bit into it. I love the Universal logo that has the plane, the prop plane going around the globe. That's always one of my favorites. And I believe the last time it was used was in like 2003 for George A. Romero's Land of the Dead. He must have just specifically asked if he can use it. And it was so cool. In the opening credits, Claude Rains Claude Rains is credited, but then it says parentheses the invisible one. So funny credits, which is something that happens in these. In Frankenstein, Boris Karloff is not credited in the beginning. He's only credited at the end. In the beginning, it's question mark for the monster. And from the very first shot, I think you're like, wow, this is beautiful. It's a long shot of a man in dark clothes trudging through the snow, and it's like knee-deep snow in the middle of this road, and we hear the sound of wind, and it's just like a beautiful shot, right, to start off with. He goes to the Lion's Head Inn, which is an inn, right? So it's like a bar restaurant downstairs, but then like they have rooms for rent upstairs. And we were talking just a second ago about James Whale. How does he get that camp in? I think one of the things he's very good at is casting and finding talent. And the people he casts in the roles around Claude Rains, I think, are really, really wild people. Like Una O'Connor. Is that her name? Una O'Connor? I think so. She plays the Jenny, the sort of bar matron, and she's also in Bride of Frankenstein. Yeah, Una O'Connor. She's the one who's like she's screaming throughout this whole movie. She has this very, very high-pitched scream. She also does these crazy mug takes to the camera. She's such a wild performer. And then her put-upon husband, and then like the dumb cop, like and all the villagers. He inhabits this like bar with all these amazingly colorful people, but then and they're all like playing games and stuff. And then the Invisible Man opens the door, and you see a full shot of him. Then a jump cuts to a medium. Then a jump cuts into a close-up, which is exactly the way that Frankenstein's monster is introduced in Frankenstein, right? Literally, like it's almost like a zoom effect, but it's through cutting. It's cut in. It's sort of like forcing you into the face of the monster. What did you think of the look of the Invisible Man?
I liked it. I thought it was clever. I think it did look like bandages, but not in like a mummy way. Like it clearly looked like, I don't know, like Ace bandages or something.
Yeah.
I like the trench coat. I think that's the classic look. I also found the goggles into it, which change over time.
Yeah.
Like in the beginning, he has like clear, like dark goggles, like almost like maybe driving goggles or something. And then later on, it's kind of, it looks almost like a homemade pair of sunglasses that cover the
Yeah.
entire eye socket.
Yeah.
And I loved him in the kind of robe later, like
Yeah, the like he it's like smoking jacket and pajamas, Invisible Man. There's like two looks in this movie.
yeah, and I think they both like invoke something funny but also really unsettling, because like you're imagining these villagers. So if it's a village, assuming, and the bar has regular clientele, is like that's their normal, and then this really weird guy shows up and is
Yeah.
very demanding and bizarre, and being in a small town, it's like everyone knows everything, right?
Right, yes.
So it's that's very odd, but I for them, I'm saying, and also frightening, because it's like, oh, who's this mystery person? Why is he here?
And they
Why is
also
he
have a
want his
media like
face?
talking about him.
Exactly, because they're in a small town. Again, they're in a small
Everybody's
town.
gossipy.
No, I don't know if you have you met a lot of people from small towns, like
Not
actual small
really.
towns.
I
Yeah,
guess.
so no, because New York, the small towns in New York don't really exist, unless you go upstate, and that's a whole other country. But living in New Mexico, I've met so many people that live in a town of like 1,000 people or something. Everybody, it's so different. Everyone knows everything all the time. Like there's no real privacy. People are gonna know your business. And also, like, and generally in those small towns, there's not always a lot. There's a few things to do,
Yeah.
whatever that looks like. There's, you know, a certain bars, if there's a monthly event or something. So any change to that, it's like everyone knows immediately, and it's something to talk about.
Yeah.
So in that case, that's what I was taking from that town, was like, oh, okay, these people have nothing going on. That's
Yes.
why they're so hyper focused. And how the rollout of how extreme it gets of sending all these people to hunt one naked
Yeah.
man, like
It's
it's
hilarious.
so absurd. But it's like, what else is going on? We have to stop his reign of terror. But it's funny though. It's like they have to stop his reign of terror, but also they're part of the problem because they're reacting to it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and
So,
you get a feeling that the whole town is inside that bar. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Like everybody's there. And they've all got drinking problems. Like at one point later on, there's a cop that's trying to interview. He's trying to figure out if the Invisible Man's real, and he's interviewing everybody who claims to have seen him. And some old man, he's like, "Where did you see him?" He's like, "I was on my way home, and he took my hat and he threw it on the ground." And he was like, "And how many drinks did you have on your way home?" And he was like, "I only had a couple," which is hilarious. He had a couple drinks on the way home. But you know what's interesting is, and this is a theme you see throughout these Universal movies, is that they always take place in England or Europe, but it's always like vaguely old worldy. You know what I mean? You're never exactly quite sure where or when we are. And despite being England, you still have a ton of people with American accents.
That's a point.
It's weird. There's something, and I don't know if this is on purpose or it's just, you know, the machinations of the Hollywood studio system back then, but all of these films have a sort of weird uncanniness in terms of when and where they all take place.
I was thinking that because so you mentioned like the bar that had the rooms for rent. That to me screams really old fashioned. But also later on in the movie, the Invisible Man has a car. So I'm like, what year could this possibly be? Like the 20s or the 30s, but maybe not even the 30s, because if it was the 30s, how could they spend that money? Because it's the Depression. Like, so it had to take place in the 1920s just for that. But also, yeah, it feels a little out of time in
Sure,
itself.
yeah, exactly. It has that, and all of these Universal Monster movies have that. The worst I think is Wolfman, because he's such a big, tall American actor surrounded by like these British people, and it's like, what is happening in this movie? Where are we? Another theme of these movies tends to be rationality and science and you know, scare quotes like civil thinking, like modernity type thinking, coming into what's traditional and creating a disruption, right? The Invisible Man here, it like Frankenstein, is a scientist. Here he's a chemist, and he has, through experimenting on himself, made himself invisible. And he's come to this little town, and that's where we are in the story. He comes to the little town because he wants to run away from where he is and just work in secret because he needs to figure out how to make himself uninvisible now. And you know, they've never seen anything like this, right? They seem like such simple people. And that's where the horror comes from, right? It like science and forward thinking, really modernity is the bringer of the bad thing.
Yeah, and it like it's the bringer of the bad thing, but there's also, I mean, there's never a point in the movie where they realize there's good things to science, intervention or like
No,
it
yeah.
almost feels like it's always the bad guy, and like it needs to, whatever it is, it needs to be stomped out or to end. There's
Yeah.
never like any complexity in that.
It's
I don't know.
always Faustus. It's always you in searching for knowledge, you went too far and you've meddled in something bad.
Yes. I do have a question for you. Have you ever
Yeah.
read the book?
No, I have not.
I haven't, but I did skim the Wikipedia.
Oh, you
Okay.
basically
So
got it. Yeah.
that was enough. But one thing I noticed is just from like the plot points is that the novel seems to be more in line with what we see as science fiction today, which is really more about like here's the process and then like grappling with that ethically. Whereas these movies don't really do that. It's more like that's the catalyst for the problem. So it's almost like in a way, maybe not heavy fantasy, but sort of more like a speculative fiction kind of question.
Well, that's see I'm glad you brought that up because it reminds me of something that I don't like here, and it's the same exact thing I don't like in Frankenstein, which is in James Whale Frankenstein. Frankenstein, they're supposed to put a regular brain in his head, but they couldn't, they lose it, right? Fritz drops it, so they put an abnormal brain in his head, and that's what makes him a monster. But as I was saying on the Frankenstein episode, it shouldn't. He should always be a monster because the thing that's bad is what they're doing, recreating life. Here, making your the monocaine, which is the thing that makes you invisible, we learn from another scientist character that it has a side effect of making you mad. But that shouldn't be. What should make you mad is the power of being invisible. Like,
Right.
it shouldn't be so literal.
Yeah,
Does
I
that relate
wonder
to what you were
why.
saying, or am I just completely
No,
off?
it's kind of, it is related, but it brings a question of like, why is the messaging they made a bad choice in the ingredient and not that the whole thing is the
Right,
issue?
right,
That's weird. Yeah.
right. Because you would think that's the point. Although I mean, I suppose you could see it as like we are too stupid. Mankind is too stupid to get it right.
That
And
seems
there's
like
something funny
very
about that too.
it's very cynical.
So something interesting that happens, and I'm sorry if I keep bringing up Frankenstein, it's the same director, is Dr. Frankenstein in the movie is very sort of queer coded. And in that movie, him making a monster, which is making life without heteronormative procreation, gets in the way of his marriage to Elizabeth. So it's almost like we see heteronormativity disrupted by the sort of queerness of creating life artificially. Here, we learn that the Invisible Man, whose name, the character's name is Jack Griffin. The Invisible Man, he has a girlfriend named Flora, and he doesn't see Flora, and she's worried about him, and he's not thinking about her at all. And at the end, towards the end, she comes and sees him, and he sees her out the window, and he's like, "Ah, Flora, how could I forget Flora?" And it's like, this guy totally forgot his girlfriend. So this is a long way of me asking, do you think the Invisible Man is queer-coded?
Yes, because he spends so much of his time terrorizing men. Anything else in this movie?
Interesting.
Like, think of all the women in this movie. It's Flora and the old woman that works at the bar.
Yeah.
Like, there's really no women in this movie. There's no real interest other than, oh, okay, I mean, I guess we could see this as almost like a Bechdel test question too, is like they don't really interact with each other. They don't interact with the main character except for whatever's important at the moment. And it almost feels
Yeah.
like, yeah, and again, it's also like the science disrupts the heteronormative behavior, which is like,
Yes.
that's another thing, which is like, okay, what are you saying here?
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's really interesting. And you know, it's interesting because Claude Rains plays the Invisible Man. And by the way, whenever I say that, I think of the line in Rocky Horror, Claude Rains was the Invisible Man in Science Fiction Double Feature. He also, Claude Rains plays Captain Renault in Casablanca, who forever filmed classes and film scholars and film nerds have questioned the queerness of that character. And is he in love with Humphrey Bogart's character?
Oh,
So there's,
interesting.
so you wonder if there's something that Claude Rains brings to the character. What do you think of Claude Rains? I mean, most of this, I do believe it's him under the wrappings, but most of this is an audio performance.
Well, I was gonna bring that up of
Yeah.
like, that is an excellent, considering that we don't see him at all, that was an amazing performance.
Yeah,
It's like
I agree.
he really knew what he needed to bring to it, so he brought that kind of cavalier speaking and
Yeah.
the kind of madness that's associated with the character. I think he did a great job, and there's not a lot of movies where the main character you don't see their face ever. I think like V for Vendetta is the one thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
But he brought it out, I gotta say. I think that also speaks to the difference between being like a voice. I know it's a different context, but like being a voice actor versus being an actor, right? It's like You have to know with your tone and your cadence and how to bring to that character to life. And you could really, I think people complained about this enough, but I think it's like a perfect example of this is like voice acting with movies with huge budgets. So they need to bring in a voice actor so that people are interested. So like you can tell the difference between Chris Pratt, the actor, and Chris Pratt, the voice actor, which is like he's a better actor than he is a voice actor, but he's not a great actor in the first place. He plays a few roles pretty well, but Claude Rains really brings it.
He's doing a voice that's not exactly his voice. It's a little bit deeper and has more gravel to it. But then he came up with this insane maniacal laugh, which really works.
It hits both tones very the horror and the comedy really well.
He does hit. He's good at doing both. Because like he there's at some point, like, so the story was that he Jack Griffin and his partner Arthur Kemp are two scientists that were working for an older scientist. And the older scientist is Dr. Cranley. Is that his name? Dr. Cranley, who's played by Henry Travers, who's Clarence, the angel from It's a Wonderful Life. So he's the old guy, and he's also Flora's father. And they work for him, and Flora's in love with Jack, but Kemp is in love with Flora, and she's not interested in him. And Jack, I guess, was experimenting with making himself invisible, and then he sort of went away, and Flora doesn't know where he is, and Kemp tries to move in, and it doesn't work. And that's sort of the setup of it. By the way, did you look up who Flora was?
No, I didn't.
So Flora is played by, what is her name? I believe her name is
Gloria Stewart.
Gloria Stewart, right? What she is most famous for is playing Old Rose in Titanic. So, like, she's in this, and then 700 years later, she's in Titanic, and she's like a meme now, right? Like the meme of like I waited 70 years. It's kind of amazing to have such a breadth of a career, like to be in The Invisible Man, but then also to be in like Titanic, like one of the biggest movies ever. Like that's crazy. I think she died in like the early 2000s.
She died in like 2004, because I'm on Wikipedia. I'm not a savant here. At 100 years old, like,
Wow.
dang,
So
that's
that
a
means she
long
was like
time.
90 in Titanic.
Yeah,
Wow.
she was also in the Old Dark House,
Oh, right,
which,
she was, which is also whale.
yeah,
That's
you
another
know
movie with a lot
what?
of bumbling people in it.
A lot of bumbling queer-coded people in it, like. Which is really funny. Which I'm wondering, like, so certain audiences respond to, like, for example, queer people would respond to like queer-coded characters, and queer-coded characters can work either way. So like straight audiences would generally not have the same experience as the queer audience, right? So I've always wondered, like, at that time, did like a bunch of like queer people watch this Old Dark House and were like this is incredible. It's us on screen, or I know this person. Like, you know, I wondered about that. I wonder about that, and probably in like The Invisible Man too. It's like he's so campy. It's like, how could you not see that, right? Like,
How could you
so.
not look at Una O'Connor and be like, this woman, I'm living for her.
You know, one thing about Titanic that I always remember is just like in an episode of Seinfeld, George skips his work and he's like, and he doesn't go to work. And Jerry's like, so what do you do all the rest of your day? And he was like, and George was like, I went to see Titanic. So that woman was just a liar, right? That old woman was just a liar. And that's all I remember. And now from like, anytime I think of Titanic, I just think of, wow, that woman just lied. Like, we watched this 2.5 hour movie. For that old lady to lie,
And then throw the heart of the ocean into the ocean.
that was so annoying.
Well, when you're 90, I guess you don't give a shit.
Nah, do whatever you want.
So this movie takes a turn towards the middle that I was not expecting, which is most monster movies of this era, you would have like the monster and then everyone wouldn't believe there's a monster except the people being killed. And then maybe like the core protagonist would believe that there's a monster and try to work to stop the monster. But in this, towards the middle, the cops are like believe it. And because he the as I said before, the chief of police is in the bar talking to everybody, trying to get down to the bottom of it. And then the Invisible Man comes in and starts throwing beer bottles around. And by the way, all the effects of just things floating in the air, all the effects in this movie in general are so good, and I want to talk about them. But I love the effects of shit just flying around. And he starts like throwing bottles and shit around, and it's hilarious. And then Una O'Connor starts screaming, which is her main thing, the main tool in her actor tool bag. And then he chokes this cop to death, which is pretty brutal. But then the weird turn is like from that point on, there's an invisible man. Like the news is like, watch out for the invisible man. Like every cop in England is like, hey, there's an invisible man. They're selling newspapers that say, look out for the invisible man. It's awesome. And then like there's these really cool montages. Like the invisible man goes into a bank and you see the drawer of cash just sort of lift up and float out the door. And then he starts throwing the money around and he's like, money for everyone! Money, a present to you from the Invisible Man! And everyone starts going for the money. It's like, this is fucking great what I'm watching. I love it.
It was so Looney Tunes, like, and what I thought was hilarious, but there's so many people in that bank when you see that drawer lift, and no one noticed.
Well, they constantly say he could be right next to you. He could be right now. Like, there's a fascinating, it's fascinating, but also hilarious scene where the cops are like, we have a plan to get the Invisible Man, but we have to do something first. And they have every cop stand the entire length of the room holding a net, and they walk from one side of the room to the other, sweeping through, right? And then when they get to the other wall, they're like, okay, he's not in here. Now we can talk. And there's a lot of shit like that, like what they do with Kemp's house.
Just
Remember the cops? Kemp calls the cops. Well, I should say the Invisible Man comes to Kemp and he's like, listen, like I'm basically gonna enslave you now. You'll be my partner, but you're gonna do exactly what I say. We're gonna kill people together. We're gonna make the world a better place. It almost You ever see the anime Death Note?
yeah.
It almost reminds me of Death Note, his plan. Because it seems like he wants to just use his invisibility to, like, in his own mind, make things better. And he's, like, basically holding him hostage in his own house. And then Kemp finally, like, he gets to a phone and he calls the cops. And then the cops show up and the cops surround the house and hold hands. Hands
Right.
across America and walk towards the, like, take a step forward. And that's how they, like, approach the Invisible Man problem. It's wild. And that's that scene where he lifts somebody up from his legs and takes his pants off.
That was so, yeah, okay. Oh my goodness. What I thought was funny was that there was also this montage in the movie of the police asking for tips and then
Yes.
people calling in with these absurd plans, and then you see the police do them.
Like the paint guns. Like they have basically like airbrush guns that all the cops are wearing. So, like, if you see something around, you paint at it, and then it'll go on the Invisible Man. And at one point, there's a cat that they accidentally paint, and it's like, oh, the ASPCA was not around for the making of this movie because they totally just painted that poor cat in like toxic oil paint.
Yeah, so they did that. There was the other one where someone was like, "Well, what? Wait till it snows and then find his tracks."
Which they do.
They do all of. I gotta say though, I kind of weirdly appreciate that the cops were listening to the public and were like, "Okay, they have some ideas here."
Yeah, it's wild. But I love but oh, like I said, like Whale is so good with like all of these like side characters. Like there's all the scenes where the cops are talking, then there'll be like the dumb cop who's like, I don't know, everybody's gotta sleep. Why don't we just wait for him to go to sleep? And it's like such a stupid thing to say. Like there's such comedy, like sort of It's kind of bubbling through all the core, the sort of like cracks of every scene. There's comedy sort of everywhere, but then there's brutality. Like, let's talk about Kemp's death, which I first of all, I thought Kemp was going to survive. He's not exactly like the most likable guy, but he's basically the protagonist, unless you count the Invisible Man himself as the protagonist, which I guess he is. You're like at one point when Kemp calls the cops, the Invisible Man is like, "Well, you betrayed me, so I'm going to kill you tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. I don't care where you hide in the world, I'm going to find you and kill you." So Kemp is like totally freaked out. So the cops are like, "Don't worry, we've got a plan. What we're going to do is we're going to surround your house with these cops with paint, and we're going to bring you in, and all these cops are literally going to be like walk around you, like with you in the middle, and then a tent over you, so the Invisible Man can't get you. Then when you're inside the police station, we're going to dress you up like a cop as a decoy, and then we're going to walk out with you and then drop you off." And the Invisible Man, and you see that entire huge long plan happen. And then Kemp gets in his car and he's driving away and he's like, "Oh God, I made it." And the Invisible Man's in his back seat and he's like, "I was there the whole time. I saw you in the police station putting on that coat." And it's like, fuck. I really thought he was gonna get away with it. And then the Invisible Man drags him out of the car, hog ties him, puts him back in the car, puts the car up on a hill, and then takes the brake off. And Kemp, tied up in a car, the car goes over the hill. You hear Kemp screaming, which is pretty dark. And then the car explodes, and the Invisible Man's laughing. And it's like, wow, it's a pretty brutal murder for this guy who we've been kind of following the whole time in this movie that otherwise is pretty funny.
I laughed so hard when that happened. I was like, this is brutal, but also like so over the top. And I feel like there's been like that. I don't think it came from this movie, but there's definitely been a trope, especially in like low budget action movies, where they'll just like push a car over a cliff and it would explode.
Always it explodes, yeah.
Yeah, and it always explodes. I'm like, how did the car ex why did the car explode? But it's so funny, and I think the thing that makes that I'm so floored about in this movie over and over again is that it's literally one guy who's naked
Yes.
and is able to terrorize so many people. It's like, how is this possible? You people have volume. How is a huge amount of people failing? Like, what did they say? Like 1,200 men? It's like they have 1,200 people. They can't catch one invisible guy.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's so bizarre. Yeah, there's also so that was
See, but
kind of
I find Kemp's death not scary but disturbing. I guess it's the screaming. There's something realistic about the performance of his screaming while the car goes over. And you think about like, what would I do if I were tied in a if I were tied up and couldn't move in a car? I would die is the answer. So it's that weird balance that the film strikes between there'll be something silly and then something so brutal.
yes, absolutely. It is brutal. I think it's because it's so maniacal to the point of
Yes.
like it's so planned too, because he had to have the rope with him. Like he knew he was going to do something like that to the Kemp.
Yeah.
So it's very like super villainy kind
Yes.
of. It also kind of reminded me in a different way of like how the Joker's been portrayed. Like
Yeah,
that
yeah.
stuff they made the Joker do, like I will kill you or strike or do something awful at this time,
Right,
and
yeah.
everyone's bugging out about it, and it still happens even though he told them it would happen. Like
Right, and
somehow they couldn't prevent it. Yeah.
the laugh is very Joker-like too, actually.
Yeah, now that you mention it, but I think that's more of a coincidence than anything, but it's very it's
It's
just so
interesting.
interesting. There's also like that brutality is also very similar to, I mean, that's the thing about this movie is like there's instances where like the reign of terror is very comical, but
Yeah.
then he'd do something like derail a train and kill 100 people.
Whoa, yeah. And it's like, why? That's what's also interesting about this movie is You know that he's turned mad and he's sort of like power mad. He wants to control the world, but he never has a clear plan. Like at one point, he's saying, we're gonna kill people. And it's like, okay, well, who are you gonna kill? Like, what do you mean by that? And then there's times where he seems to be doing random shit, like throwing the money around or killing people or derailing that train. But then at one point, he says to Flora, like, I'm gonna sell the invisible formula to all the world leaders so they can have invisible armies. And it's like, what is your plan? I don't know. Like, typically I think it's a flaw when you have a villain that doesn't have a clear plan, but I kind of like the fact that his plan is very unclear. And really, he like you it's funny that you said he's just one man, because he kind of doesn't have much power. I mean, when he leaves Kemp's house, he goes and like sleeps in a barn. Like it's not. And then just the farmer notices him, and he doesn't notice the farmer. And then the farmer goes to the cops. And he's like, "The invisible man's in my barn," and that's how they get him. They go, and then it starts snowing, and they're like, "Oh, it's snowing! Here's our chance." They go to the barn and they set it on fire, and they're like, "All right, wait, he's gonna open the door and walk out," and then he does. And then there's a very cool effect of his feet in the snow, although it should look like feet, and it looks like the soles of shoes. That's sort of an error. And I don't know how they did that. I don't know how they did that effect. Seeing like the snow impact down when he's stepping on it. It's really interesting. And then they get him, they kill him, they shoot him. Which is beautiful. The snow in this movie, I think, is so beautiful. It begins with snow and it ends with snow. And it's that really great fake snow.
The one that's really cancerous, or
Oh yeah, you could you have obviously everyone has that meso what is it called?
mesothelioma,
Yeah,
the
mesothelioma by the end of the movie. Yeah. Of course they were all probably smoking as well. And Invisible Man smoked still. So let me ask you, have you seen other versions of the Invisible Man?
sort of I saw Hollow Man. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's with Kevin Bacon. I'd say that's not an official remake, but I'd say that's a pretty close remake. It's
Yeah, I
basically
def
this idea. I mean, it's closer to this than like say the Invisible Man remake from like whatever that was, 2021, 2022.
Yes, because it really, yeah. The only thing I really
Oh,
remember about
2020.
it.
Invisible Man was 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
That one's really good, even though it's nothing like this at all. It's all from the point of view of his girlfriend, and it's a very like it really grows out of the Me Too movement. And basically it's about a girl who was in a really toxic, abusive relationship with a guy, and the guy was emotionally and psychologically abusive and would like gaslight her constantly, and
Jeez.
he fakes his own death. So everyone thinks he's dead, but then he starts torturing her, and everyone thinks she's losing her mind, but it's really him. He has made himself invisible. In this, he doesn't do it to himself. He has like a suit that he's made that makes himself invisible, and he's just torturing her. And what he wants is for her to come back to him, and then he'll stop torturing her. It's a really it's a brilliant reworking of the whole idea.
Oh, I like that.
Then you've got
That's really cool.
Memoirs of an Invisible Man, starring Chevy Chase and directed by John Carpenter, which is a very weird movie because I don't think it know. I mean, it's been years since I saw it, but even as a kid, I remember being like, what is this movie supposed to be? Is this funny or scary or interesting? Is
Oh
it.
my God. Did you I just looked up the poster of this movie. It's so dumb.
The Chevy Chase movie?
Yeah, because it's like hit mostly invisible except like the front of his face, and he's
Sure.
wearing a fedora and holding Daryl
Sure.
Hannah.
The most memorable thing about that movie is they fulfill something that they talk about in this 1933 Invisible Man, which is Claude Rains says, I can't eat, or I have to hide after I eat because the food is visible in my digestive system and you'd see it. And you see that in the Chevy Chase movie. You see him eat and you see it like go into his body, and it's really interesting.
Oh, okay. I wonder if they didn't have that in the 33 movie because it would be really hard to show.
Probably, but they do an incredible job with the effects. I mean, the scene where he's like where the townspeople are like, "We want you out of here," and he's like, "You want to see who I am?" And he takes the gauze off and he's invisible and he throws it at them. That's pretty good. I think I sent you the episode of Corridor Crew where they talk about how the effect was achieved.
Oh, that was really cool.
It's
Yeah, I did watch that.
for the time, it's really amazing effects. I mean, it's just really amazing effects that they're doing practically.
Absolutely.
In the end, after he's shot, he's brought to a hospital and he's dying. And for like 1 second, we do see Claude Rains' face, but they do something cool where he's invisible, but then you see like his skull fade in, and then the muscles, and then his face. So even that's a really cool effect.
I really liked and this is what in that video that you sent me that they were talking about is like when they were unwrapping the gauze and you could see just nothing there.
Yeah.
And how he threw the fake nose at them was really funny.
Yeah. The fake nose I find disturbing.
Yes, it was. It was very disturbing and the townspeople were very disturbed by it.
He's so uncanny looking when he's dressed up in the whole garb.
That's the freaky part, right?
Yeah.
That's the horror. Absolutely. The effects were great. Like I still can't believe that what they achieved in that time. There's even a scene where like he's lighting a match and you just see the book and like
Yeah.
match or
Yeah,
something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. And you're like, how did they do that?
Yeah.
Those are definitely questions. And the footprints too. I kind of wish that they covered that of like, how did they do that?
Yeah. Because also, when they shoot him, his body falls on the snow and you see that indent. And it's like, how do they do that shit? Really interesting. I mean, for a movie that, like, the effects are like, I guess people would be coming for the effects. But everything else is working on such a high level, you almost don't even need the effects. It's always amazing to me when you look at a film that's made by such a great filmmaker and it feels contemporary because of how alive it feels. Like all the performances in this, nothing feels stilted really. This movie really feels very accessible, I think.
I would agree. I like it doesn't the pacing is pretty good. There's no real like dull parts or scenes that I was kind of bored out of. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's entertaining. It kind of does everything.
Yeah, and I think that definitely something like this can be made again, but I mean it has been in different ways, but I'd be curious on how they would handle today like the tonality, the horror comedy.
Right.
I'm sure the special effects would look pretty good too, especially with what we have with computers.
Yeah.
That would make everything that they did in the 30s so much easier.
Well, in the 2020 Invisible Man, this is a spoiler for that movie. Three, two, one. There's a great jump scare where she thinks he's behind her and she's not sure. And then she picks up some white paint and throws it and it goes on him and he's like literally right next to her. And it's such a good jump scare. I believe that was
Ooh.
the last film I saw in the theater before COVID.
That's a good note to end on for a brief time. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think the first movie back was Harley Quinn or maybe King Kong versus Godzilla, one of those classics.
Oh, that'd be fun too.
So Nadia, well, now that you've seen this, are you going to see some more Universal? Spooky season is upon us. Are you going to watch some more of these?
Yes, I do want to see Dracula. I think like when I first tried to watch it just the pacing was a little slow for me, and I think I just need to give it another chance.
It has no music.
I don't like the music.
Remember, Dracula is the first of these, and it's like right at the beginning of the sound era. So it has no it has a sort of uncanny silence to the whole thing, which I think can it, I mean it's so off-putting to our contemporary to a contemporary person watching it. You're like, wow, it's so not what you're used to. This has been The Invisible Man from 1933 by James Whale. Fantastic.
So
Listen.
much fun.
Halloween is the most important time of year here at PCMC, and we put out the entire month is a big Halloween celebration. We put out not one Halloween special, and typically we put out four Halloween specials, but by gum, the way the calendar works this year is there are five Wednesdays, which is when we come out. So there are five Halloween specials this year. So stay with us And we're going to continue talking about Universal Monsters, me and all my universe, me and my rogues gallery of monstrous friends.
Excellent.
Nadia, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Mike. This has been great.
We end every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.